Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with President Obama's trip to Mexico to meet with its new president, Enrique Peña Nieto. George Gratian, who writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal and is the author of The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Created, joins us to discuss the issues the two presidents will be dealing with, in particular the new approach to the failed war on drugs that Peña Nieto is taking. Then we'll examine the bloated and dysfunctional counterterrorism boondoggle the U.S. has developed since 9/11 that relies on technology that does not work and failed to detect the Boston bombers in spite of Russian intelligence alerting the FBI and the CIA that one of the bombers had ties to radical groups. Mark Perry, the author of Talking to Terrorists, Why America Must Engage with Its Enemies, joins us to discuss the difference between amateur and real terrorism, as outlined in his article at Foreign Policy, The Driver, an exclusive look inside the mysterious death and life of the world's most dangerous terrorist, not named Osama bin Laden. Then finally, we will speak with former FCC Commissioner Nicholas Johnson about Obama's choice to head up the FCC and how money bundlers for presidential candidates are normally rewarded with ambassadorships to small countries, not given critically important posts like heading up the FCC that impacts the lives of all Americans. And joining us now is George Gratian, who's a professor of comparative politics at the College of William and Mary. He has written more than 20 books, including Mexican Messiah, Andrés López Obrador, and The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Have Created. He's also an associate scholar of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal. Welcome to Background Briefing, George Gratian.
My pleasure.
And the president's in Mexico meeting with the new president, Peña Nieto, who, of course, is of the PRI party, and they have a history of being kind of cozy with organized crime. And while they apparently will not have any overt disagreements about the war on drugs, which has cost up to 100,000 lives in Mexico, they apparently will concentrate on happy talk, I guess, about trade. Is that I don't mean to be cynical, George, but what do you expect from this visit?
Every Mexican president, upon taking office, has wanted to diversify his relations to diminish Mexico's dependence on the United States. For example, Peña Nieto last month spent 10 days in Japan and China trying to cultivate the Oriental market and present himself as an Aztec tiger. The focus will be on trade. It will be on investment. It will certainly be on migration. But it's unavoidable to keep from discussing security.
Well, but there's apparently a different approach. At least there's talk of a different approach. Calderon, the previous PAN president, declared war on the drug cartels, and this has led to the mayhem that I mentioned, up to 100,000 deaths. There's an assumption that Peña Nieto is trying a new tack. Is that your understanding? Is there a new strategy underway?
Yes. He has completely rejected Calderon's kingpin strategy, that is, trying to decapitate the heads of cartels, because that proved counterproductive in as much as lieutenants then vied for the top spot. Rival cartels sought to poach on the turf of the fallen leader, and various gangs associated with cartels sought to enhance their presence. I think the use of the broadsword is going to go by the boards, and there will be a more subtle approach that is relying on the scalpel, and that's going to involve using informants, using eavesdropping, flying drones in pursuit of underground organizations, and having informants infiltrate the cartels.
So the PRI party, and obviously it's you know, not the pre-party of old necessarily, that finally being booted out of office after 70-plus years. I think they served as long as the Communist Party of the Soviet Union survived. They're back now after an interregnum with two pan-presidents. Presumably, they are a different party. So, but on the other hand, the tactic that the PRI used was always to co-opt their political opposition, particularly on the left. They were able to sort of essentially bribe people into silence. And it looks like they've done that with the youth movement that came out against them, against Peña Nieto in the last election. The Yo Soy 132 student movement, a lot of the leaders of that have been given jobs in Televisa. So give me a sense of whether or not that old pattern that the PRI have of co-opting their opposition, essentially buying them off, is that happening?
The PRI has a new face and a very handsome one in the person of Enrique Peña Nieto. But the PRI is still a party that wants to concentrate power. It wants to co-opt its opponents. And at the same time, it's the most practiced party with regard to corruption. There is a new program that Peña Nieto has launched called Crusade Against Hunger. And there are 14 elections in Mexico this year. And you wouldn't believe it, but a disproportionate share of the budget for this Crusade Against Hunger is going into those 14 states. And they have already nabbed a PRI activist in Veracruz, one of Mexico's largest states, with doling out access to this crusade against hunger in return for support in the July 7 election. So the PRI has a shiny new fire engine, but it's still undertakes the same practices as it did before.
Again, I'm speaking with George Grayson. He's a professor of comparative politics at the College of William and Mary. He's written more than 20 books, including Mexican Messiah, Andres Manuel López Obrador, and The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Created. He is an associate scholar of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal. And we're talking about President Obama's visit to Mexico, where he is meeting with Mexico's new president, Peña Nieto. And you mentioned, George, earlier about immigration being obviously on the agenda. But my understanding is that illegal immigration from Mexico has all but dried up, has it not?
Well, it's not as robust at the border, but what's happening is that migrants are coming into the United States legally under one of a half dozen different visas, and they're just simply overstaying their visas. And the Department of Homeland Security really has shown no effort to try to track down those who have come in abiding by the law, but have broken the law by overstaying their documentation.
But the 11 million Mexican immigrants already in the country are very much a part of the issue over immigration reform. And I imagine Mexico has a position on that, and that Obama will hear about it.
Absolutely. That will be one of the three or four major topics that they discuss. But what Peña Nieto has to guard against is precipitating a backlash, because just like Mexicans don't like the U.S. involving ourselves in their domestic policy, the U.S. Congress, I don't think, would take kindly to Peña Nieto scolding Barack Obama about the failure of legislators to act on immigration reform in the U.S.
Well, that doesn't mean that they won't have a vigorous private discussion about it.
They certainly will.
So what else will they discuss, do you think?
They'll discuss petroleum. because Mexico is gradually running out of black gold, and they need much more investment. And the problem is that Pemex, the state oil company, is a monopoly and doesn't allow risk contracts, that is, that a firm would come in and try to explore and develop oil, and if it were successful, would get a portion of the hydrocarbons discovered. And I think the United States, while it's probably not going to be an advocate for American oil giants, would like to see Mexico engage in some kind of risk contracts, because oil accounts for one-third of Mexico's budget, and unless Mexico makes reforms, it's going to be an oil importer in the next 10 years.
But Pemex, the national oil company, and the nationalization of oil, which in many ways nationalized American oil companies, I think it was back in the 20s or 30s, William F. Buckley's family among the people that, I think that's probably what drove him to the right, if he wasn't already there. Isn't that a source of great national pride in Mexico? The idea of the Americans getting back into the oil business, I should think that'd be a hard sell.
Well, most of Mexico's gasoline now comes from the United States. And so the two energy sectors are intertwined. But Mexico has deposits, but they're offshore and they're in extremely deep water. So Pemex doesn't have the technology or the skills to gain access to those riches. And so it should be looking to a Brazilian oil company or a Norwegian oil company, not necessarily one of the so-called Seven Sisters, to gain the know-how and the technology in order to recover reserves and avoid the risk of running out of petroleum.
Well, I certainly don't see them hiring BP after what BP did to the Gulf.
No, but a country like Statoil in Norway, I don't think Norway's invaded anybody, at least in the last 500 years. But then the Swedes invaded them. Petrobras in Brazil has this capability, as do the Norwegians, and probably 10 or 20 other companies around the world.
So when you say the United States, in other words, President Obama is discussing energy and oil with the Mexican president, the new Mexican president, if it involves other countries, what are the bilateral connections?
Well, if Mexico continues to see its oil production decline, that's going to have a devastating blow on the economy. And if the economy begins to falter, that means that there are going to be more unemployed Mexicans who are going to try to get to El Norte, either legally or illegally. So the U.S. has a vested interest in Mexico's prosperity, and I think that will be made clear when the two leaders speak.
Well, what about, obviously, the president can't, just as much as you said earlier, George Grayson, that Peña Nieto can't say anything bad about the U.S. Congress's failure to deliver on immigration reform. I guess Obama can't lecture Peña Nieto over the disparity in wealth in Mexico, where you have, I think, the world's richest man is Carlos Slim, the Mexican telecom oligarch. So how bad is that situation? It's always been that case, hasn't there? But in many ways, I wonder about the pot calling the kettle black, given how much...
I think the United States should occasionally use some tough love. Mexico, if it were run by Singapore for 20 years, we would be talking about the Colossus of the South, and we'd all be buying pogo sticks to jump across the wall. It's extremely rich, but the income distribution is terrible. And moreover, tax collections are quite low, even compared to countries like, say, Brazil. Brazil collects twice as many taxes as a percentage of gross domestic product, as does Mexico. And the corruption is ubiquitous, as we're seeing in Veracruz now. And this Veracruz issue has national consequences, because Peña Nieto has been shrewd enough to negotiate a pact. It's called El Pacto por México, and it involves the three major parties. And, of course, democracy isn't just holding elections, but you've got to have results from those elections. And Peña Nieto has, amazingly gotten the major parties together. And I just hope this, what I call the Veracruz gate, the Veracruz gate, is not going to queer this relationship. But the second largest party, the National Action Party, has said that it's not going to continue talks on a whole spectrum of issue until the PRI puts the culprits in Veracruz in jail, or at least arrest them.
Well, my understanding is that Monterrey is sort of used as the model in terms of how America sees Mexico developing. That's a business-friendly part of Mexico that does a lot of trade with the United States. So is that what Obama's pitching?
Well, Obama really wants to get a sense of what Mexico's new security policy is going to be. And by the way, Monterrey has just been devastated in the last 3 years by cartel violence. And it's one of the most dangerous cities now in Mexico, whereas it used to be this island of cosmopolitan tranquility. But the U.S. has been heavily involved with security issues in Mexico at the request of former President Calderón. The PRI doesn't like being as dependent on Uncle Sam, and so it's talking about moving possibly to create a Gendarmerie Nationale on the model of the French National Guard. Indeed, French diplomats have been in Mexico discussing this possibility. Also, the so-called Merida initiative is really no longer workable because it's associated with Calderón, and anything that is identified with the Calderón administration is just off limits. So Mexico is attempting to configure a new security policy, but it doesn't know exactly what it's going to do. And one of the major components is the Attorney General's office, and even the new Attorney General has said that ministry is in chaos. So Peña Nieto, who came in with sky-high approval ratings, has seen his numbers drop to 50%, and that's lower than any of the previous four presidents at this stage of his administration. So there are a lot of question marks hanging over Mexico.
Well, just in closing, George Grayson, one of the perennial problems, of course, in Mexico has been the corruption in law enforcement, that there's nothing scarier than a Mexican policeman. And there's the old expression in the drug world, plomo y plata, silver or lead. You either get a bullet or a bribe. That's your choice. And these low-paid police officers are very susceptible. And it got so bad, I think, within the federal police there, that it was easy to find who the corrupt cops were because they simply didn't bother to pick up their paychecks. You know? So what's going on there in terms of cleaning up law enforcement? Because I'd heard some rumors that there were some hit squads out, government hit squads out, assassinating some of these drug lords, that they'd sort of taken, you know, the sort of Dick Cheney dark side. So two questions.
Well, I don't know about the second question, but Mexico has never had an honest, professional police force, either at the local, state, or national level. And one of the goals of this Gendarmería Nacional would be that in 6 years, you would have recruited something like 40,000 young people who have no law enforcement background, but into whom you could inculcate the values of protecting human rights, of avoiding corruption, and of being proud of your profession. Now, if your teenage daughter came home and said she went to marry a policeman, you would pack her off to a nunnery in Italy. So terrible is the reputation of Mexico's law enforcement agencies.
But what are the chances then? Because you've got to pay people in many ways to make them less susceptible to bribery, don't you? Not only recruit people with some morality.
Well, there's no solution. I mean, Mexico's never been able to do that. Every new administration changes the law enforcement structure, and that militates against continuity, which may be good, but unless you can carefully vet your recruits and keep them isolated from the current police cadres, you're not going to have a chance to improve professionalization. And the Mexicans are trying to pay more. They have new, nice-looking uniforms. They're offering discounted home mortgages, the pay is higher, and they are getting some college graduates, but it's more in forensic areas, such as polygraph tests and eavesdropping. So it's a Herculean task, and I suspect if we were having this conversation 10 years from now, we'd be saying about the same thing.
Well, George Grayson, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with George Grayson. He's a professor of comparative politics at the College of William & Mary. He's written more than 20 books, including Mexican Messiah Andres Manuel López Obrador and The Executioner's Men, Los Zetas, Rogue Soldiers, Criminal Entrepreneurs, and the Shadow State They Created. He's associate scholar of the Foreign Policy Research Institute and writes a weekly column for the Mexican magazine Milenio Semanal. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking about the bloated and dysfunctional counterterrorism boondoggle.
Your mind. Politics needs human beings. Politics needs lies.